It'll never go down as one of Hollywood's greats, but in its brief day, the film The Mask was something of a hit. I don't know if you saw it, but the hero is a man called Stanley Ipkiss, and he puts on a mask which transformed him from an awkward loser to a debonair winner. Helped by his dog and the cartoon powers of the mask, Stanley manages to outwit the police, defeat the bad guys, and win the girl. Through it all, he realizes that actually he had it in him all the time. And he doesn't really need the mask, so the film ends with our hero, girl on his arm, throwing the mask away into the river. It seemed to work as a film because although it was pretty schmaltzy, it had got just a little more to it than that. Because I suspect we can all identify with Stanley Ipkiss. We've all hidden our weaknesses behind a mask of some kind of social or cultural acceptability. We've all dreamed of being a little more like our heroes. We've probably all fantasized about being a different, more glamorous personality. Yet at the same time, we know the folly, don't we, of the if only I was game. Like Stanley, we want to be ourselves. Change for the better, yes, but still ourselves. We want to be known and loved for who we are, not for who we pretend to be. We want to have the courage to throw the mask away. And muddled human beings as we are, while we want to have the courage to throw the mask away, we still keep on trying on other masks. Let me speak for a moment about what I've called the power of the mask. The power of the mask, it's a dangerous power, because not everyone can throw the mask away. Some think and certainly live as if there were no reality without some mask or other. Madonna, in her music documentary from the early 90s, called as ever with Madonna, who rather shockingly, In Bed with Madonna. It was really just a documentary that followed her on tour, a kind of reality documentary. Well, in one scene, she goes to the doctor to have her voice checked because it's giving her trouble. She's there with Warren Beatty, the film star who was her co-star, and the doctor meets with her, examines her, and then says, do you want to talk off camera? Madonna declines. And Beatty, who's obviously got fed up of having the cameras follow them around wherever they go, laughs and says to Madonna, why would you want to say anything off camera? What point is there in existing? And turning to the doctor, he goes on, she doesn't want to say anything off camera. She doesn't want to live off camera. Now, actors and performers are notorious for it, not being able to take masks off. But, of course, it's far more pervasive than that, isn't it? Creeps into politics when spin and style replace substance. It creeps into society circles where how you look becomes more important than who you are. And what is going on when people live out their lives vicariously through sport or soap operas? You know, their ups and downs this week depend on the results this weekend. Now, don't feel sorry for Manchester United and Chelsea fans. You know, they've had a wonderfully healthy reality check, haven't they? It's Barnsley fans you need to fear for. When will their feet ever touch ground again? Now, the mask is a dangerous power. And in religion too, there are masks that can be the death of us. They don't need to be wacky and way out. They can be thoroughly mainstream. And yet they can form that kind of protective mask, which means we don't have to face the real us. And they can be held onto with an almost fatal tenacity. Now, in this incident we're looking at this morning, the rather kind of complex argument that's going on, the mask revolves around Abraham. Actually, there are harsh words that are said, but they're not anti-Semitic in any way. It's a Jew, Jesus, talking with Jews. And we Gentiles, we non-Jews, we have our own similar masks. I mean, there's many a time when I've spoken with someone and I've asked them something like, you know, are you Christian? And they've come back to me and said, I'm Catholic. I'm Church of England. I'm Orthodox. Yeah, I want to say, fine, great, but how about answering the question? Because I asked, are you Christ's man? Are you Christ's woman? And their answer becomes a great defensive mask. See, no need to ask me that question. I'm Protestant. I go to All Souls. Well, for the people in this chapter, if you look down, you'll find their mask in verse 33. They answered Jesus. They said, we are Abraham's descendants. You look on to verse 39 and you see them put it on again. Abraham is our father. If you read through to the end of the chapter, you'd find two or three more times they put the mask on. And the result of doing it, of saying, look, you needn't worry about us. We're Abraham's descendants. You needn't worry about us. We're fine. Therefore, they won't know the freedom that Jesus talks about in this chapter. They won't acknowledge the slavery that he spells out for them. In fact, such is the pride and hostility their mask generates that in the name of Abraham, a great man of God, they even want to kill God's greatest messenger. You see what Jesus says in verse 37? I know you are Abraham's descendants, yet you're ready to kill me because you have no room for my words. You're so confident of where you are, you can't listen to what I've got to say. It still shocks me at times. How many nice things we can say about Christ and yet still insist that it's our words and our ideas that count and will shape the way we live. It's just what they're doing here. The power of the mask. In the name of reality, you can lose touch with reality. In the name of religion or God, you can reject God. And into that group hiding behind that mask, Jesus speaks of what I've called the freedom of the truth. The freedom of the truth. What Jesus offers, you see, is not religious respectability, but freedom and truth. Which is all very well for me to say, but it sits uneasily with most people's perceptions of Christians and Christianity, doesn't it? Look at verse 31 and 32. Let's start where Kendra began as she read this passage to us. To the Jews who believed him, Jesus said, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Now, if you look at it carefully, you'll realize nearly everything about that statement seems to raise more questions than it answers. For a start, it all seems the wrong way round, doesn't it? We tend to think, free me. Then I'll hold to your teaching. You know, prove it. Then I'll practice it. And Jesus seems to be saying the reverse. Or the talk of freedom that has a strange ring to it. The idea that Christians are free. When to everyone else, they look to be the ones leading the narrow, restricted lives. You know, mustn't do this, shouldn't do that, no fun please, we're Christians. And all of that before we even begin to talk about truth. Never mind the truth. Now that is an idea that most people approach very warily these days and certainly don't link too readily with freedom. But when you look at it, you'll see that truth here is not a long list of ethical laws. It's not a series of propositional statements or creeds about God, life, the universe. Actually, it's a case of identity. Jesus' identity. That's what his teaching, the teaching he urged them to hold on to, that's what his teaching has been all about in the first half of the chapter. These verses, when you look at them closely, are not saying, lead a moral life and then you'll be free. Now, actually what they're saying is, accept Jesus for who he claims to be. the one from God sent to rescue us from sin, then you will be free. And although John writes in verse 31 that Jesus is replying to the Jews who had believed him, it quickly becomes clear that this is only a very superficial faith. It's something like, look, I'm with you so far. Now, I'm interested in knowing more about God. I don't mind coming to church with you. And Jesus says, if you hold to my teaching, if you get hold of me for whom I claim to be, you'll find you know the truth that sets you free. I'm that important, says Jesus. The power of the mask, the freedom of the truth, which turned out to be the freedom of the Son, Jesus. It's a freedom that will free us from hypocrisy. Freedom from having to wear a mask, a front, even that to religious hypocrisy. You know, I am Church of England, I'm Catholic, I'm a child of Abraham. But it's a disturbing process because it involves facing the truth about me. If you know your American footballers, the name O.J. Simpson will probably ring a bell for you. He was fit in every sense of that word, a great smile, a sporting legend, only his fame on the pitch was overtaken by his notoriety off it when he found himself in court on a murder charge. It was televised, became something of a show trial in its way, and the prosecutor who opened the case against him and was having to introduce the jury to a case against an enormous icon and sporting legend, he began it like this. He said, being wealthy and famous cannot change one simple truth. He's a person. And people have good sides and bad sides. We'll show you the other side of the smiling face. Yeah, there's some great theology in that. I'm not sure the prosecutor realized it. People have good sides and bad sides. We'll show you the other side of the smiling face. He could have said it about any of us, couldn't he? Well, Jesus speaks that way here, really. You see, look, in verse 32, just look down again, he says this. He speaks about how you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. And they answered him, we are Abraham's descendants and have never been slaves of anyone, how can you say that we shall be set free? Why are you talking like that to us? We don't need this freedom. And it's as if Jesus says, look, having a national and religious pedigree that is wealthy and famous, to use the prosecutor's phrase, they're not actually quite as good as they make out. We've never been slaves of anyone. They're sitting under Roman occupation at the time. But having that kind of a background, it can't change one simple truth. Your people, whether you're Abraham's descendants, Protestants, Orthodox, Catholics, agnostic, humanists, whatever you like to describe yourself as, your people. You've your good side and your bad side. I'll show you the other side of your smiling face. And he spells it out in verse 34. Jesus replied, I tell you the truth. Everyone who sins is a slave to sin. That's you, and that's me. In my first ministry job, I can remember once mentioning something in a sermon about a temptation I'd had and fallen for, some disparaging thoughts that I'd had. And the next week, as I was visiting around the parish, I was in with a couple, and they said to me something like this. They mentioned what I'd said, and they said, we didn't like that. I said, why not? They said, we want our clergy to be perfect. I wasn't hugely pastorally insensitive. I said something back like, tough. You know, I said, you've got me. And what I really meant is, I can't afford to put that mask on. It's not me. I hope I'm not shattering the same illusions here today, but listen, my background, my stock is here. Here's where I come from. Verse 34. A sinner who's a slave to sin. Everyone who sins is a slave to sin. And the thing is, we rarely understand how serious that is. If we even use the sin word, too often we trivialize. You know, we'll shrug, we'll admit we're not perfect, and we'll assure ourselves we won't go there again. That there doesn't have to be a next time, at least not if we don't want there to be. And we speak a bit like the alcoholic who admits he likes his occasional drink and assures you it's not a problem. It's all under control. He doesn't have to have another one, not if he doesn't want to. And if you've ever known any alcoholics, you know there's nothing more vital than that they see themselves more clearly than that. Everyone who sins is a slave to sin. You know, sin's like, seems so trivial, it's like a piece of cotton. You know, you get a bit of cotton, wrap it round me once, tie it up, see if I can break out. I've probably just got to flex a muscle or two, you know, if this helps. I'll be free. But put a couple of threads round, or it may take 3 or 4 or 5, it won't be very many, and then, you know, I won't be able to do it. It'll take a few more to get, you know, Rico's rippling muscles there, but it won't take very many, and even he will be just a bit of cotton. But it's trapped you. Wrapped you up. Already consigned for eternal destruction. Everyone who sins is a slave to sin. I can remember as a student telling a lie. It was just a little story that made me look good in a group. I only ever wanted to tell it once. And then a few days later, I was with some other folk and there was someone on there the first time and they said, "Hey, Hugh, tell us about that time when." And you know, I had to tell it again. Which meant a few days later I had to tell it again and again. I lost count of how many times I had to tell that story. I only ever wanted to lie once. I was trapped in the lie. I'm a slave to it. Everyone who sins is a slave to sin. If I'm going to be set free from pretending, I'll have to be set free from that kind of hypocrisy. But there's something deeper still here. Because if verse 34 is true of us, we need more than freeing from our own hypocrisy. We need freeing from tyranny. Everyone who sins is a slave to sin. And to be a slave puts me in a desperate position, one I can't get out of myself, one that leaves me in need of rescue. And please understand, if this is the starting point, which it is, you do realize what we Christians are not saying, don't you? We Christians are not saying, look, we're nice people and we found Jesus to make us even nicer. Actually, Jesus is not for us some value-added bonus. He's vital necessity. We've had it without him. From where I live just down the road, I could hear yesterday the demonstration outside the Chinese embassy. The chants were, as they always are, you know, very loud. And yesterday's one was, free Tibet, free Tibet, free Tibet, China out, free Tibet. I don't know enough about that particular situation, but you don't need to look far around the world to find countries suffering under terrible tyrannies. The kind of country where you imagine any regime change would be welcome. Only again, you don't need to know much history to understand how easy it is to swap one form of tyranny for another. When Jesus comes on the scene, there's a tyranny everyone would love him to free them from, the tyranny of Roman occupation. Only he seems to have a completely different regime change in mind. He's been saying all the way through the chapter that he's come because without me, you die in your sins. Without me, you won't face this regime change, and without that, you'll never know real freedom. Everyone who sins is a slave to sin, and there's no real freedom, whatever happens on the political front, unless the human heart is set free from the tyranny of sin and all it leads to, judgment, hell. And that's actually a gift, not an achievement. You see how he goes on? Look back to verse 34 again. Jesus says, I tell you the truth, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. And then he goes on. And now, a slave has no permanent place in the family. Now, whatever he or she does or achieves, that's just not a slave's status. You never can belong in that way. A slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So if the Son, Jesus, sets you free, you will be free indeed. This freedom is a gift, freely given, not earned or merited. This freedom is real. Now, it doesn't remove immediately all traces of sin. A life under the previous regime, too many of them sadly survive for now, but it does rescue and release the human heart from the tyranny of sin. We're not under its regime anymore. And it's not something temporary. It's a forever thing, a change of status that makes us once enslaved sinners, now the free adopted child of God. Not just for now, but for all eternity. If the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. The power of the mask, the freedom of the truth, which is the freedom of the Son. Jesus says, I'm the one to do that. If the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. Let me just spend the last moments, if I may, speaking about that freedom and how to experience it. Because for Jesus to set me free does involve the removal of the mask, my badge of self-sufficiency, of respectability, the whatever it is that makes me acceptable. And that's often the last thing we want to do. Sheila Walsh was a Christian singer. She made it onto TV here, headed to the States and made some impact there before depression in the end took her to a hospital. I met her once, and I heard her give an interview, and she said something like this: to enter a psychiatric hospital seemed to be a sign of failure, rather than a step towards the renewal which would only come with the facing of such fears. And she went on, sometimes we simply don't want to face the truth about ourselves. The myth seems so much better. But I can't have real freedom and the myth. I can't have real freedom and the mask. If the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. But the loss of the mask still seems such a frightening thing to so many of us, doesn't it? Taking it off seems almost impossible, especially if we come from a kind of shame culture background. And we think of exposés and outings in the newspaper, and the way so often the tabloids doing it seem to relish in the damage and the destruction they're causing. And it frightens us all the more. And we just realize with Jesus, it's all the reverse. John, we'll call him John. He was a businessman, went on one of those business trips abroad. You know, it was a classic story, in the hotel room on his own, no one near him that he knew. He was a married man, had a fling, had an affair while he was there, came back full of guilt. And finally, one day he sat down around the kitchen table with his wife and confessed everything. There were tears down both their faces. And you can imagine the scene, can't you, as he came to the end of his confession and really was holding his breath, waiting to hear how on earth his wife would respond. And in between the sobs, she looks up at him eventually and she says, I forgive you. And he's astonished. Better than his wildest hopes could ever have been as to how she'd react. The sense of relief is huge and enormous. There's a kind of new spring in his step as he goes back to work the next day. Fortnight later, he finishes some project rather earlier than he imagined, gets off early, comes back home, comes through the front door, is just heading for the kitchen when he hears noise upstairs. As he goes up the stairs, he hears voice in the bedroom. With all kinds of emotions churning through him and his heart sinking, he walks quietly along the landing and comes to the bedroom door that's ajar and hears his wife's voice. And then he realizes as he peers through, she's kneeling and she's praying. And what she's saying is this, Lord, help me to forgive. It's so hard. It is so hard to forgive, isn't it? Especially when you've been betrayed like that. It's so hard for God to forgive and to set us free too. Don't imagine for a moment that that's a nothing thing. It cost Jesus the cross. When he speaks back in verse 28 of a time when you've lifted up the Son of Man, he's not thinking of public acclaim, but public vitriol. He's thinking of being lifted up and nailed to the cross, of taking the judgment and the humiliation that our sins deserve. And it is those scarred hands that are reaching out to help you and me lift off the mask and set us free. If the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. So tell me before we close, how do you respond to Jesus' offer of freedom? Now, don't tell me, actually. Tell God. How do you respond to his offer of freedom? Now, some of us, plenty of us here this morning, will have known Jesus for a long time. I suspect it's time for us to say thank you afresh, isn't it? For the one who's faced us up to ourselves and still given freedom. Some of you, you'll be still full of all kinds of doubts and questions. Let me say this to you. Do not hide behind your questions. Ask them. Maybe for you, that Christianity Explored course would be a great place to do it. And for some, there'll be some who've been circling Jesus, so to speak, for years. It doesn't have to be years. It may only be minutes. But you know, you've heard his offer of freedom. You know he's spoken the truth about you. You know that actually for you this morning, the thing to do is to say thank you. To ask for freedom. To take off the mask and come to this Son.